When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I just wanted to say before we get started this episode that this is a live stream and this is going to continue to be a live stream series on YouTube this offseason and all through the year. I will be uploading the audio here. So if you're hearing this, I appreciate you checking out the podcast. However, if you want to get involved in the live stream, ask your questions or see the visuals that are up on the screen as we discuss things, don't forget to check out the YouTube channel at youtube.com/@GTEFantasy. Don't forget to check us out on the Patreon as well, which is also patreon.com/GTEFantasy. And Underdog Fantasy, use code GTE. If you're a first time user or player on the site, use that code and you'll get a deposit match guarantee up to $100. So again, check out all the stuff we have going on. Otherwise, enjoy the show.
The base is loaded and one out.
Oh my God!
Deep to right field, way up there, and way out of here! Second deck walk-off home run, grand slam!
Welcome in, everyone. This is the first of what's going to be a weekly live stream the rest of the season. We're starting in spring training, and we're doing these spring training lineups or roundups, excuse me, where we're going to discuss lineups, position eligibility, position battles, what else? I got a list here. We're going to discuss every spring training lineup, lineup analysis. I just mentioned that team by team breakdowns in terms of like platoons, injury watch, who's replacing them. Just a lot to monitor starting in spring. So with that said, we'll jump right into it. And let's bring up this screen here. If I can, there it is. All right. So this is my spring training lineup tracker. This is exclusively on the Patreon. But I'm bringing it from behind the paywall to show you what it looks like for those who might not have seen it before. We have, and if you're listening to this on the recording, this is going to be on the YouTube channel at youtube.com/@GTEFantasy, where you can get the, you know, the visuals behind the audio. But yesterday we had five lineups drop. And again, the goal is to look at these lineups and decide what we can take away from it. Spring training, there's a lot of noise. The WBC is happening this year, but there's so much we can still dive into, trying to decipher playing time, platoons, lineup spots, and just a lot, and position eligibility. We have a guy that's already on the position eligibility watch, a guy who's entering the year with outfield, who can actually gain a shortstop eligibility rather quickly and probably to be expected and being drafted as such. But stuff like that is what we're watching for. So last year there was like upwards of 60 names I had that we were watching the position eligibility for. And then there was also, and then of course you have just all the notes and whatnot. So again, this is the lineup chart. I'm not going to do this every live stream because obviously it's behind the paywall, but I will bring it out from time to time. And we're going to start with the Padres from yesterday. And something that caught my attention was Bogarts was leading off, and you'll see I have notes here too. But Bogarts was leading off versus a lefty. Not too surprised. I mean, kind of surprised, but I mean, this was out Tatis and Cronenworth in lineup. However, Cronenworth won't necessarily lead off or even play against every lefty. That's where he struggles. But Bogarts has an OPS, was it like a career? It was like an 870 OPS. I wrote 370. That's wrong. 870 OPS against lefties with I had it right the first time. Yeah, 870 OPS with 135 WRC plus. So he obviously is able to hit lefties well. Bogarts leading off against lefties, although I don't expect that to stick. It's still something that caught my attention because, well, who says it can't? Last year it was Ha-Seong Kim that would lead off against lefties, and Bogarts is markedly better. Not to mention, Bogarts, if he doesn't lead off against lefties, maybe Tatis will, but Tatis wasn't in the lineup, and that's kind of the only wild card of how the lineup will shake out with Tatis in there. But the top of the order against lefties yesterday, which the top four, I'd say, between, between Bogarts, Machado, Soto, Cruz, just enter, get Tatis in there, and get Tatis in there, and you will be able to see that top five is probably what you're going to see against lefties. No Matt Carpenter. I would expect Cronenworth in there, but towards the bottom of the order. Luis Campusano is a guy I really like this year. They didn't go out of their way to get another catcher. Austin Nola isn't what he used to be, And Campusano is a top prospect, and we know how aggressive this team likes to be with their prospect. And Fox, I appreciate you chiming in about the spreadsheet. For the last two or three years, it was free. Now it's on the Patreon. So if you are interested, the Patreon is linked. It's patreon.com/GTFantasy, where this stuff, I'm actually doing these write-ups, like what you see, all those write-ups. It's actually, I'm doing them on a separate sheet as well. And I'm posting both every day. So people that are on the Patreon get access to both. I will occasionally drop some stuff from behind the paywall, which is going to be similar and all this. But this year, for the first time in 3 or 4 years I've done this, it did get put up on the Patreon. So I appreciate the interest, but that's just what it is. And obviously we have more lineups to get to today. So this will be filled up a lot more because there's a lot more games today, but we're talking about the five teams from yesterday first. The next team up, I guess we have to jump over to the AL. So let's go over to the AL. And we have the Red Sox. And this one was weird. I actually forgot about it. Somebody tweeted at me about it. I was like, oh yeah, the Red Sox, because they played a college team yesterday. So their lineup didn't show up on the usual lineup tracking spot or the usual site I use for lineups. What caught my attention was Masataka Yoshida was batting fourth. And I wouldn't think much of it necessarily. But then when you look at the top four in the lineup, that's pretty legitimate. The only player really missing, obviously, other than what's his face for second base? The name's escaping me right now. But you're missing Justin Turner, which will likely DH, but him as a DH will probably move up here into the top 3 to 4. Yoshida was expected to lead off, and I still think he will. But Duran leading off, I think it's one of those things where they want Duran to earn the job. And then when you think about it, they went out and got I gotta pull up the rosters here because memorizing Duvall, memorizing all these rosters isn't always the easiest either. But they went out and got Duvall, right? So we all thought it was automatically Duvall's job, and it should be probably because Duvall's defense is way better than Duran. Duran's a butcher with the glove. However, he's a butcher with the glove, but I think they still want – Duran's a former top prospect for this team, and I think they want Duran to earn this job. They gave him the leadoff spot. When he played last year for a good portion of it against right-handed pitching, Duran was leading off. So leading off, again, and it was against a righty – I don't know who it was against yesterday because it was against college. I didn't look into the college pitchers and all that because it's college. But Duran yesterday led off against what I presume to be a righty. However, I can't say for sure. So it's one of those things that we have to watch for platoon here. Will they let Duran get run against righties to start the year? Will his defense be good enough? He's made more adjustments at the plate with his mechanics. So Duran is somebody worth monitoring for sure, especially if they're going to let him run with leadoff. And a couple years ago, when Kike Hernandez was leading off, everyone was like, there's no chance it's going to stick. Then the manager, usually we get some good quotes from the manager throughout the offseason that will back up what he's doing or help explain what he's doing. So if we can get some manager quotes, maybe we'll get some more insight on this team than your average team just before, without even having to wait more than a couple games. Just because, again, teams are probably going to start showing their hands with the WBC coming up because they want to get those lineups. They want to get an idea of what they want to do with their lineups before they lose some of the core players for the WBC. So I'm looking into these lineups very closely this first week because this is all we're going to get in terms of consistency with these lineups until the last week of spring training as well. Kike Hernandez batting third caught my attention, not because I think he was already kind of expected to be batting in the top half of this lineup, top third of this lineup, but batting third changes things a little bit. Devers batting second still. Hernandez can run, he obviously runs into more RBI opportunities. So it's just something to consider. Like maybe he'll have a little more RBI opportunities if he's actually going to bat third. But again, no Justin Turner. I can't sit there. It's really hard to see where these guys are going to land. Plus, I want to see how Duvall and Duran play out. I want to see if they do try to give Duran the playing time versus righties with Duvall the playing time against lefties. But just a guess. My nose is. Did he? Okay. Lefty starter. Thanks. I knew. Thank you for that. Apparently, the Red Sox actually faced the lefty starter. So, but again, it was also, you mentioned pulled after 0.2 innings, and it wasn't a pro team. So there was probably, this is more just running through the motions. We'll see, because Duvall's coming off a year where he didn't really play that well. He's 34 years old. That's why I really feel strongly about the whole, let's see what they do with him. We all just assume it's Duvall's spot, but maybe it's Duran's spot to lose. There's been talks about Yoshida's power. I mean, it's funny because you see that talk about Yoshida's power, right? Thank you for the question, Sam. He's asking, for those listening, not watching, how are we feeling about the recent reports for Yoshida's power? Well, I think the quote was like a 70 grade raw power. Yeah, and if you watch some of the highlights, the dude hits mammoth shots. Like he hits nukes. Like Yoshida can hit a nuke. That's not even a question. Obviously, we have to see how he translates all that into the against major league pitching. He's going to see a lot of minor league and lesser pitching. Although in the WBC, if we see them face off against the U.S. or Dominican Republic, he'll get some real, you know, some good looks against real pitching and pitching that's actually, you know, really trying, not just guys going out there working on stuff, because that's the whole point of the WBC is to compete. That's something that's, and again, that goes back to monitoring the WBC. It actually could have value. If Yoshida goes to the WBC and has value against these good real life pitchers who are actually going out there throwing their real stuff, not just working on things, that could be reasons for optimism. Or if he struggles and has like a lot of strikeouts, that could be a reason for pessimism. So the WBC isn't completely useless, and monitoring this stuff during the WBC, there's just different ways to do it now. It's a little unique this year, but yes, it's a long-winded way of saying I'm intrigued, because you take that report of the 70 grade raw power, and then you see that they put him fourth in the lineup day one. And this is a guy who needs the reps. It's not like Duran needs the reps. I mean, they both do. Why didn't they just bat them 1-2? Why not get Yoshida up at the lineup spot that he should get, either A, being comfortable in, or and B, getting him more reps at the same time? So the fact that they slotted him fourth, not emphasizing getting him as many reps as possible, batting him first or second, it's just attention grabbing. We're talking about one day samples here. We'll get more lineups today, but I doubt they're going to start back to back days. And if they do, that's great. I'm not anticipating it. And yes, we have lineups rolling in right now, so there's going to be, I'll do a little bit of reaction to those before I get out of here at the end, once I'm done with these last recaps. But the goal is to do these live streams a few days a week for those interested. I'll be doing a couple of these a few days a week, no more than 30 minutes at a time, recapping stuff, going over some highlights and kind of touching up on all this. So if you enjoy it, subscribe to the YouTube, because you can definitely catch those there. If you can't catch them live, you can watch them back, because I am going to have graphics and stuff for them. I'm actually going to custom make graphics for these, not just use this chart. I'm going to prep a little better, but one day I figured I could show off the chart here. The Royals missing some core pieces, obviously, as well. And again, most of these lineups will, but I mean, you know, you have Sal, Vinny P, and you have Kyle Isbell, all in spots that are relatively expected. Witt Jr. should bat the top of the order. They're missing, Melendez. So Melendez will probably slot top up here, which it's just good. It's one of those things that's almost like confirmation. You have to expect Melendez to slot up here, considering how they put Sal and Vinny P in spots that are probably like more than likely to stick. And Isbell last year, he batted seventh most of any spot. And these are the types of things I'm noting. Like I take what we're being shown and I go back and look at last year's track record with this team, seeing how they treated players, seeing where they hit them last year, and seeing like how we could see the playing time fall out. So there is more to it than just like, oh, look, he's a seven hole hitter. Yeah, but maybe he's like a Bobby Witt Jr. Last year, he only let off like four games. So it's like, are they going to lead him off? Or is the bigger story here that Witt is sticking with shortstop after transitioning back to shortstop from third base for the final month of the season? Because a guy like Michael Garcia that I was really interested in, he can take a hit now, because the path to playing time was at shortstop for him. But now it looks like Witt might be just carrying over his shortstop playing time. And if Witt's carrying over playing at shortstop, that kind of lessens the likelihood of we seeing Michael Garcia break camp as the shortstop, obviously. But maybe Garcia can play third or second, because will Massey pan out? There's a whole bunch of questions. They have Nate Eaton. He's outfield, obviously. But you get my point. They have players that if Garcia could play other positions, which I actually need to go look to see what positions he played last year to be sure, which I can actually do right now. That won't take long. So this is part of also looking at these lineups, trying to project who can come up and be difference makers, especially for fantasy purposes, earlier than later. And a guy like Garcia, the reason why he is worth mentioning is because he has a fantasy-rich skill set in terms of stolen bases and decent on-base ability. The issue with Garcia is, again, just right now the path, but it's not even a path to playing time issue, because it's not like they have a bunch of playing time things going on here in Kansas City. It's Kansas City. The problem is they always seem to really like Dozier and guys like that. They have a thing for their you know, guys. They just do. They like to keep their certain core guys. But I'm looking up. I'm trying to talk while looking this up. It's actually more difficult than it looks. So last year Garcia played strictly shortstop and DH. So right now he's only played second base once. It's been shortstop his whole minor league career. The last time he played any other position was second base in 2017. So yes, Garcia. Unless they move Witt over to third base, which they've shown a willingness to do, I don't see Garcia breaking camp as the shortstop if they obviously keep playing Witt there all spring. I think Dozier is likely going to start third base, among other. They obviously have Johan Camargo that played there yesterday. But I'm getting, but this is how granular we have to get here, trying to project playing time, especially for the deeper leagues, the NL, the AL only types. These names matter. DCs, where you're trying to find reserve round players that could just be relevant via injury, via whatever. Garcia, it's not going to take much for Garcia to get onto this team. That's why Garcia's still a guy I really like late, especially because he's pretty much free. And the word free gets thrown out, it pisses me off, but Garcia really is free in most leagues, again, except for all of your AL onlys. But even in DCs, he's like later round guy. So just one of those things that you want to project that playing time. And right now, Kyle Isbell is another guy that he, the only thing you have to be careful with Isbell, though, he was in a platoon for the most part. Last year, he, I think he started against just three lefties. So we can look at that lineup a little bit. Let's pull up their actual roster. I'm looking at Roster Resource just to get, and Roster Resource, great job. I like to utilize them just for names. I kind of make my own opinions based on things, based on what I follow and all that. But they do have obviously all the names, the rosters. It's a really good resource for that purpose, if nothing else. Yeah, Samad Taylor, Fernando Reyes, like these are the depth guys for the outfield. Isbell might get some extra run because they don't really have a lefty that they can. Or sorry, they have no, they have a righty. What am I saying? They have Samad Taylor that could play, that could be right-handed, but they have other options. I don't know. I'm not gonna sit there and bank on full-time playing time for Isbell after they showed us they weren't really willing to give him that last year, even at times when they needed, didn't have the depth either. So I appreciate this around the diamond. The shorts output have been crazy. Yeah, I like to have fun with those. I try to get unique and have a little something different, something you don't see on YouTube and TikTok and all that too often. Let's move over to, so yeah, like I mentioned, Isbell batting seventh seems likely. Deeper league, obviously, and that's where a lot of this value of this stuff comes in. Let's go to the Mariners, because this one was actually very interesting to me, because Colton Wong, they signed him in the offseason. I didn't expect him to lead off. I really didn't. I figured he'd be batting fifth or towards the bottom of the lineup. Day one against the righty, he's batting leadoff. And it's significant in the fact that Wong is batting leadoff while the core of the lineup is in. Obviously, there's some, you know, there's we're missing what's his face at catcher and probably a different DH. I don't think Mike Ford's going to DH, obviously, but maybe. I mean, who knows? I think it's kind of obviously Pollock was brought in for that problem. Man, this is what sucks about trying to memorize players on every freaking team. And it's obviously it's going to piss me off. I don't get it. It's an obvious name too for catcher there. No, because they signed Calhoun. That's why I have Calhoun. Cal Rally. That's where the Calhoun came from. So Cal Rally's obviously not in the lineups, but that shouldn't affect Wong. Wong getting a chance to lead off with the core lineup, I think that's a significant takeaway to at least keep notice on, because this goes from a guy who's going to be batting towards the bottom half of the lineup who already had platoon concerns and still does, to a guy that can gain a few extra plate appearances, which for someone like Colton Wong, plate appearances do matter. And yeah, so that's worth mentioning. And of course, that means Ty France bumps down from second, where he hit most of the year, to third in the process. And that could be close to, that's like 100 RBI spot right there. It's just a matter of health with France. So yeah, this lineup, nothing really. Obviously, we're watching Kelnick and how he performs. If he can, my thing with Kelnick and spring training in general, stats largely don't matter. But a guy like Kelnick, I want to see if he can improve the strikeouts. We saw guys like Hira. Hira had a big spring training last year, but he struck out like a madman while posting gaudy numbers. If Kelnick is posting gaudy numbers while striking out 30% of the time, I'm not going to buy it. But if he's posting sub 22, 23% strikeout rate, Kelnick becomes a lot more interesting, because it looks like maybe this approach change or the mechanic change, maybe it's paying off. Maybe he's finally coming into his own. He's still a young player, still has limited experience at the major league level. Not all prospect growth is linear, as Paul Sporer will often say. Kelnick is a guy that I have my eyes on, but again, it's mostly, I can care less if he hits 15 home runs in spring, but strikes out 35% of the time, I'm not buying in, because that strikeout rate is more likely to carry over than the power production. We know the tools are there. It's not a question of the tools for Kelnick. It's a question of, can he stop striking out? And obviously he's another guy who should benefit from the shift band, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll see. But that's the type of stuff when it comes to spring training. I look for strikeouts, like strikeout rates. And for pitchers, if pitchers have issues with walks and strikeouts, I like to see how they attack. Are pitchers improving their command and command and control? Or are they still like Ryan Pepio from the Dodgers? Dude has electric stuff. He can get the strikeouts, but he has walk issues. If we see him performing better in terms of the walks in spring, I'm encouraged by that. That's something I look for. However, I don't care if his ERA is 7. I don't care if his strikeouts are as long as the strikeouts aren't terribly down. It's all about the command and control. Can he attack the zone? Can this pitcher improve where he's weakest? That's what I'm looking for. And obviously the performance of a new pitch, but that's hard to quantify in such a small sample usually, especially when pitchers are throwing it randomly. I honestly don't know this answer, Fox, about he asks what spring training stats have the greatest correlation to regular season success. I don't think there, it's just such a small sample. It's a small sample of a small sample. Guys are playing 8 to 10 games out of like the 20 to 25 we'll see, or 20 or so that we'll see from them in a given offseason. And on top of that, a lot of guys are working on things. A lot of guys are working on new is it this offseason? We're seeing the pitch clock and the hitter clock and all that get put into effect. We have hitters getting adjusted to that. We saw Machado get his first ever. He's the first ever major leaguer to actually have issues he actually got a strike called on him for taking too long. So that type of stuff is that's what we're watching for more so than spring. But in terms of stats, like I said, all I really watch for, because I've seen some correlation, but I don't have the R squared necessarily or anything else, is that the strikeout, like a hitter with strikeout issues in spring with, and it's been an ongoing issue, or like Travis Shaw a few years ago, name drop, I know. But I remember him, he had these issues with his mechanics in spring, strikeouts were up, that carried over, and I don't think he was ever the same after that either. So it's one of those things where I like to look at plate approach and all that, like the walks and strikeouts. For me, I just, from what I can recall, have been the biggest carryover. ERA, home run, like obviously, and maybe power production could be something that I'm not sure that's overly sticky, but guys like, I think was it Chris Davis the year he broke out, had a huge spring? Will Middlebrooks, I think the year that he had a decent year, had a good spring with terms of power production. So you don't want to ignore power production. I believe Adolis Garcia had a solid year too, the year that he broke out in spring. So you don't want to completely ignore this stuff, but it's more or less you can't bank on it. So in terms of actual correlation, very little, I would say, correlates truly. But that would take somebody doing pulling the numbers and pulling the actual correlation numbers. I'm going off of just, you know, since I've been monitoring this, since I've been watching this a lot more closely, what I've seen stick more so than what I can actually prove is stick. So I don't want to sit here and speak from a point of view that's like, you know, a proven spot when it's not. On to the Rangers. I've already scrolled down to them, as you can see. And this one was interesting just because I put Mitch Garber here and I'm realizing maybe he's not. I'm going to take this off as a weak side platoon and kind of just make him. I think he might just run with it. I forget that last year I had to go back and look. He played like between catcher and DH. He didn't platoon at all. And I'm over here thinking because they have other options. They have Josh Smith. They have Brad Miller, which shouldn't be a thing, but they have him. They have Mark Mathias. They have these guys that can all platoon and have splits. But if Garver's going to get full run, it's going to be via the DH because the guy can't stay healthy. He's going to catch a little bit, I think, but not much. I expect that to be mostly Jonah Heim. So a guy like Jonah Heim, but I have him a little higher in my ranks because I expect him to catch more and get some of that volume. And Heim's a guy that had a little bit of an unlucky second half and another guy that should benefit from a shift ban and et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I say should, and let's not overemphasize the shift band thing. It's ridiculous. Teams are still going to figure this out. It's just a matter of, I think it's just going to be a small bump. Like if you're looking at reasons why a tiebreaker type of thing the guy's a lefty with a little bit of a BABIP issues and you can see a high shift rate. Yeah. You could probably say, okay, he's going to gain enough to where I might prefer him over this guy in the same range. It's not a reason why you should be bumping a guy X amount of rounds up. Like let's just make that very clear. Cause people are overemphasizing the shift ban, in my opinion, I think this year, because people suddenly, what you think players aren't going to suddenly pull ground balls to the first and second baseman? They might get a few extra hits, obviously, thus the batting average goes up. But you get my point. It's over. It's being overstated and overblown, I think, blown out of proportion. But it's easy to get that way when we have all these new changes and stuff, and we get excited. Oh man, can't forget the drink. Got to stay hydrated. Shameless plug, of course, as well with the GTE Cup. Anyway, so that caught my attention. I realized Garver, there's a good chance he plays full-time via the DH and catcher. So we'll see. We have to monitor if he starts getting run, because, again, they just have other options. Jung down to seventh. I thought I plugged him in personally for six, which seven isn't terrible. But against lefties, maybe Grossman gets moved up because we know Grossman does hit better against lefties. And we saw Grossman platoon with the Braves last year versus lefties at one point because that was his stronger side. So we'll see. I mean, he had a home run yesterday. So, of course, that's going to add to the hype, I'm sure. But Grossman batting sixth and Grossman coming in pretty much Bubba Thompson bye-bye. And obviously the other fallout is that there's less outfield spots for them. They needed this. So, like, this team was lacking on-base ability in the bottom half of the lineup. They were also lacking any type of consistency. And Robbie Grossman, not the greatest, but can offer at the very least some consistency. So we'll see how he transitions to and now, you know, he's not batting at the top of the order. There's less pressure on him. A lot of things. I think Grossman's going to come out to try to prove something. I think he's being overlooked and has some deeper league value. Josh Jung, though, still like him a lot. Still think there's a lot of upside there, a lot of potential. Former top prospect, a year removed from being a guy that everybody was really in on, and a slow start after coming back from injury. I don't see that as being a reason enough to be fading Josh Jung or to be so low on him. I feel like we often have we're just so quick to react. People are so quick to just write off somebody based on such a small sample or based on other, you know, outside factors that we need to see more from these guys. So real quick, it's we have about 7 minutes left in what I want to do with this live stream. So I'll go through some of today's lineups, some stuff I just want to talk about. So news, the Braves. The Braves manager came out and said that today he's going to treat his lineup as if it was like pretty much opening day type of deal. And so my curiosity was, who do we see DH and who do we see at shortstop? And there's been talks all offseason about Grissom not being ready. Is he ready? Not ready. I thought he might get pushed back. He's starting day one in what is supposed to be close to an opening day lineup. Is it just to get Grissom some reps at shortstop still because he still needs them? I still don't think that's sold, but I do think, you know, that's still encouraging if the manager says X and we see Y. But we also see Albies at DH, and that's because they also said that Albies will be getting eased into spring training via the DH. So let me pull that. Let me actually pull that screen up real quick here. Sorry, just a moment. How the heck do I? Oh, you would think I would know how to do this a little better. 1 second, share screen. Here we go. Boom. All right, we're sharing screen. We're looking at we can do this. It's a little better. You see my, see more of my pretty face this way. But yeah, we have the Braves and the Red Sox, and this is the lineup I'm looking at right now. And this is what I was like pretty curious about to see how this would turn out. And yeah, so we have Olsen batting second, pretty cool. Rosario, but it's a lefty. So again, this is Rosario batting fourth. I don't know if I buy that. Who's missing? Someone has to be. Let's pull. This is where I have to pull. This is why when this takes me so long, I have to sit there. I'm like, who's missing? Let me go to their actual page and pull up who's missing and try to correlate that. This is why you're watching me do this in real time. Michael Harris. Oh, it's a versus lefty. So this is what I was getting at. I thought maybe we would see Harris Albies platoon up here. Platoon, but the fact that Albies is batting fifth against a lefty, even though they're easing him in, it's interesting because I expected, you know, kind of a platoon from the two spot, Harris getting against righties. But if Olsen's already batting second and against a lefty, maybe this is just how they're going to plan out these top three here. So maybe there is no platoon at second in the two spot to start of the year. Maybe Olsen's going to slot back in. We saw Olsen bat second at times last year. We're missing Sean Murphy. I knew there was a big name that we're missing. And Ozuna, of course. But and Ozuna usually plays against lefties. And I know last year he had some splits where he was actually better against righties, but Ozuna will factor in as well. But again, Albies being eased in via the DH, that obviously changes things. But yeah, no Sean Murphy, no Ozuna. We can and Eddie Rosario batting fourth against lefty won't happen. He might not even play against lefties, honestly. So I'd be surprised if he did, because just how bad he was last year. So yeah, this is my interest, my spot versus lefty. Just in general, my spot to watch here is the two spot for the Braves and the shortstop battle, which Grissom gets first looks. I'm hopeful. I think Grissom, in terms of talent wise, Grissom can do it. I just wasn't sure that they, because like it was weird. You had mixed signals. Ron Washington's like, yeah, I believe in him. He's working hard at it. They had like three workouts. But then, like, you have some stuff from, like, the GM and stuff saying, like, well, you know, maybe he'll start off in the minors, blah, blah, blah. Hopefully we get a clearer picture. Hopefully Grissom comes out and proves he's ready for it, because he's the name that we all want to take it and run. Yeah, see, this is when you have to laugh at spring training lineups, because look at Biggio and Espinal at the top, LOL. Abrams, so this is funny. One day, like yesterday, there was a quote I pulled this morning from an article that said that these two right here for the Nationals will be batting towards the bottom of the lineup. And looking at it, that's still pretty much, like, I don't see why it won't happen. They're missing a lot of starters. This is just them getting reps at the top. It's just funny, just the timing. So this is when you have to look through the, like, you look at this and you realize you can't take anything really away from this lineup, A, because of how much they're missing from it, B, because of the quotes from the manager. So I'm more likely to lean towards the quote of the manager quotes for now until if we see this consistently throughout the whole spring training as they get full lineups in. Then I'll change my opinion. But right now I'm leaning towards believing what the manager said compared to, although actions speak louder than words, in this case, I don't think they necessarily do for this whole lineup. Manessa's batting third. I could see that. Stone Garrett getting a start right away. That's nice to see. I'm hopeful he can steal a spot because guys like Alex Call, you know, whatever. Guy. The problem with Garrett is his strikeout rate and all that. But yeah, nothing to see. Abreu batting third. People thought there was a chance he wouldn't bat top of the order. I think he still will factor into the top, not the top of the order, but like people were saying maybe he bats fifth. I always thought he would bat third or fourth just because of how they like to go left, right. But there's no, we're missing a few, obviously, that this lineup, but there's nothing, it's trash lineup. This one is interesting only because you have, you know, Kutch batting fourth, Santana batting third, and Ono Cruz batting first. All you're missing is Brian Reynolds right there. This is very realistic, and these guys are two guys that are going very late in drafts with a lot of potential for upside and just overall production potential. And Kutch, he was oddly affected as a righty. He's one of the few righties that stood out to me when I was looking at shift numbers. So maybe he benefits from the shift ban a little bit, but in general, he's getting playing time. You know, it's like the farewell tour. I think this is final. I think he's gonna retire for this year. Gets to play for his, you know, the team that, you know, kind of made, you know, where he made his name. I think McCutchen gets full run this year, and I think he plays full time. He still has a power speed skill set. No reason why Kutch can't be something solid for fantasy, especially considering where he's going in drafts. And Santana, one of the bigger shift benefiters, most likely. He has jumped up in ADP, but still very much in the reserve rounds. Still hits the ball as hard as ever, still has elite plate discipline. These are things that are going to help him play up. And again, the playing time is going to be there. And I don't see him not playing pretty much. And this, again, off the top, like this, what I'm watching here is third base. Paredes gets a start at third base against a righty. And this could hold because they don't really have a third baseman right now. And Walls, who's expected to be one of the bigger factors in terms of like fighting for playing time, is dealing with an injury right now. Not because the bat isn't good, but the glove is really good. So, but hey, if Paredes can run with it over Aranda and all that, that's great for him. Nick Gordon at shortstop, weird. I guess they're probably gonna utilize Nick Gordon the same way. He's probably gonna play most days, just all around the infield and outfield. He's just going to have the value. He's going to play most, though, because that team likes to rest people. Against the lefty, I'm expecting Dahlbeck to get most starts against lefties with Cassis sitting. So I feel like that's an obvious platoon situation there that makes too much sense. What else do we have? That's kind of it for those. No other questions. So I appreciate you guys checking out the live stream. Those who stuck around, it's 30 minutes. Perfect. This is what you should expect moving forward. About this long, or subscribe to the YouTube. I greatly appreciate it. And for those catching the end of it, you can watch it later. But yeah, that's all I got. Appreciate you guys checking it out, and we'll be back later this week.